The BBC presents My Music. A radio panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here's Steve Race to introduce the teams.
Thank you. Thank you, and hello again. Like the proverbial bad penny, we're back. We being, as usual, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden, yours truly in the middle, and on my left, John Amis and Frank Muir. This first round is nothing short of elemental. Gentlemen, take a quick mental dash through the elements and tell me, Ian Wallace, you first, which of the elements is concerned in this music?
That's Wagner.
Yes.
And that's about it. I'm not a Wagnerian. That's my trouble. I mean, the Ride of the Valkyries, and that's about...
Well, yes, it's from the same set of works, as you might say. It's Ring-ish.
It's Rheingold, yes. Isn't it?
I think I'm going to have to tell you this, aren't I? Well, you half a mark for Wagner. Comes from Valkyrie, actually.
Oh, it does come from Valkyrie.
The element concerned is fire. It's the magic fire music. It's the ring of fire which Wotan weaves around Brynhilde on her mountain top.
Oh, well, I got half of Wagner. That's not too bad for a start.
Right. Little generous, but I'll remember it when the other side's turn comes. Dennis, this is something decidedly lighter from you. It comes from the start of a musical, but it concerns an elemental catastrophe just the same.
You want us to build a what? It's gonna do what? 40 days and 40 what?
Great start to a musical. Who is about to do what, Dennis, there?
Well, yes, I've never heard this. I don't know this at all, but I think I can make a guess at it. It's Danny Kaye.
That's right,
isn't it?
Yes.
And it's obviously Noah.
Yes.
And is it the adaptation that Richard Rodgers did of Obeys or Noah? Was it of Obeys?
Yes. Well, I don't know, but Noah. Richard Rodgers' musical,
Richard
yes.
Rodgers,
the title, do you remember?
I can't remember the title.
Two by Two.
Oh, that's a good title.
But you certainly have the answer. It was Noah, played by Danny Kaye at the start of the musical Two by Two. Later on, of course, they sing Ark, Ark the Lark, but that's... No, they don't. Don't write to me. Let's proceed. You have a mark, Dennis, a one out of one. John Amis, what elemental moments does this represent? Any ideas?
Well, I think that's middle C, so why don't we say water? We've already had it.
No, elemental moment, I said.
Elemental moment. Ah, then it's probably from The Creation by Papa Haydn.
Representing, you would think, perhaps chaos, the creation of the world at the very start.
Well,
Haydn's creation.
You put it better than I could.
Well, I helped you in a bit, so I'm helping you. Not that you really need the help there. You have a mark, because it is, in fact, the very opening of Haydn's creation. Might have been easier, I suppose, if I'd played you this bit.
The beginning, God created the heaven and the earth.
Yes, that would have made it easier, wouldn't it?
John Shirley Quirk,
that's right, yes. Frank, again, the elements. What has this amiable dance to do with the elements? Not to mention a couple of reindeer.
Oh,
Frank.
Thunder and lightning.
The elements.
Elements. Not an electric fire, is it?
No. Of a kind, yes, actually.
It's a polka.
Ah, yes. The
and not the Trish Trash.
No, no.
It's Thunder and Lightning, isn't
That's
it?
Right. And which two reindeer did I have in mind?
Thunder and Lightning.
Yes. Or in German? You've got the mark anyway.
Donner and Blitzen.
Blitzen. Yes, that's right.
Donner und Blitzen.
Yes, that's right. You have a mark.
Yeah.
Santa Claus's reindeer, of course. Around now concerning singers and the operas in which they appear. Ian, when Melba appeared as Rosina in The Barber of Seville, she used to take a considerable liberty, Ian, in Act Two. What was the liberty?
Did she?
Yes, she did indeed. The lady's name was mentioned in the mess.
Yes. Well, this probably means that she wasn't the only soprano who used to take a liberty in the second act of The Barber of Seville. I remember singing it many, many years ago with a Romanian soprano, and of course Dr. Bartolo goes to sleep in the lesson scene in his chair so that Rosina can make love to the Count Almaviva, whom she thinks is a penniless student. And in the Rossini aria, there are about four places where he wakes up and embarrasses the lovers. But this particular soprano sang a piece called Carnival in Venice. With variations. You know, you sometimes hear people doing it on the cornet or the trumpet. And she went on for hours and hours and hours and hours. And we'd been rehearsing another opera all day. And I was rather weary. It was the end of the week. And I fell asleep. Literally fell asleep in the middle of this scene and was awakened by the audience's applause. And I must only tell you that it is the most terrifying thing to wake up hearing the audience applauding and, you know, really saying the classic cliche to yourself, where am I?
Yes.
And knowing suddenly that it is you have to sing virtually the next line. To return to Dame Nelly.
Well, we have her.
And her
think,
toast and peach.
Yes.
Presumably she used to sing. Well, I imagine she probably made a bit of a concert.
Yes, that's absolutely right. You got your mark with bells on. She had a piano wheeled on the stage in the lesson scene. Her accompanist would then join in. She would give a brief ballad concert, ending with Home Sweet Home. After which the opera was resumed as if nothing had happened. Rather sweet there. Dennis.
Where am I?
Yeah, well done. Dennis, Helen Porter Mitchell was born in Melbourne in 1861. When Miss Mitchell died in Sydney in 1931, what did they call her?
They called her the late Helen Porter Mitchell. Yeah.
Who do you think it was, Dennis?
Well, it wasn't Grock, so I take it it's Dame Nellie Melba.
Dame Nellie Melba.
Well, even further welcome
I
return.
Cannot but give you a mark, yes. John, at a celebrated operatic performance, Mary Garden blew out two candles, hesitated over the third, and then moved the third and fourth candles. What was remarkable about the scene? It's quite a serious.
There should only have been three candles.
Well, no. not really.
It sounds rather like Tosca, Act Two.
Yes, that's right. I'm going to give you the mark, and I'm just going to give the answer. As Tosca, she had just stabbed Scarpia. The stage directions say at that point, she lights two candles and places them beside his body. What she did was blow out two of the four, hesitate over the third, and then move the third and fourth to beside the body. And the Paris audience, which knows a bit about opera, gave her a special round of applause for the ingenuity of this bit of business, which was no doubt thought out by the director anyway. It's rather a nice moment. You have a mark.
Waxing respectable.
Frank, I have a newspaper cutting that reads, "The Pig-Headed Peasants will be given at the Surrey Hall Theatre, London, on the 26th. Odd name for an opera, The Pig-Headed Peasants. Who do you think might have written it?
Quinton Hogg.
That's a very nice, quick thought. I rather like that.
Sounds a bit grim to me.
You'll get the mark for saying Quentin Hogg, obviously. I'll tell you, it was by Dvořák, written in 1874. he of the DV Star. The South Bank Opera Company did it in London in 1974. Everybody gets the mark in that round.
You know he was really Irish, don't you?
Dvorak.
Yes, his name was D.V. or Rock.
God willing, or Rock.
This next round has a sort of theme which will emerge after Ian has answered his question. Ian Wallace, here's your question. What is the connection between this... and this? Do you know?
Yes, I think I do know. It's the... Sullivan's lost chord.
Yes.
The first is a performance which I take it probably you performed. Did you want to honour?
No, I performed the last. I gave the last performance.
Oh, you did the last.
The one last, I was found by.
Yes, the last bit reminded me of Jimmy Durante having been the guy who found the lost
that's
chord.
That's correct, and that's it was lost. The very same chord you heard, the lost chord as found by Jimmy Durante, gets you a mark. The original bit, by the way, was played on one of Bruce Angrave's lovely organs, the Imhoffen Muckel Chamber Barrel Organ. Finer name there does not come. Dennis, a question arising out of that Jimmy Durante record.
Now everyone knows Tchaikovsky wasn't recognized for 200 years. Brahms wasn't recognized for 300 years. Beethoven wasn't recognized for 400 years. But I can't wait that long.
Why can't he wait that long, Dennis?
I refuse to do an impersonation.
No, just...
I can't wait. I only bought two suits. Something about I only bought two suits of clothing.
Yeah, it's good enough. I have only got two changes of clothes. But certainly good enough for a mark, John, further on in the same, I think, immortal record, he describes the search for that lost chord.
How I struggled. I worked my brain to the bone. First I put an A flat with a B minor. Then I put a B minor with an F major. Then I put an F major with a B minor. Then I tried an A and a B and a B and a G and a G and an E and an E and a D and a B and a G and a G and an E and a B and a G and a B and a G and a B. What kind of a piano is this? No apostrophes.
John, how did he eventually come upon the lost chord?
Oh, Jimmy Durante?
Yes.
I don't know the record.
You don't? Well, Frank can help, perhaps.
I don't know? Well, I knew the record, but I've heard the record.
This is on the record, yeah. Well, I thought he did. He said, I'm going to sit down at the keyboard here and wait until that lost chord returns. And he sat up down and he played this chord with his rear. And he says, that's funny, I usually play by ear. Sitting down on the keyboard brought the chord back. So I can't give you that mark, can I? Frank, your turn. It's said that madness awaits the great composer.
People said I was mad. But that didn't discourage me. They said Mozart was mad. They said Puccini was mad. They said Louis was mad.
Who's Louis?
Frank, who is Louis?
His uncle.
Yes, my uncle. He was mad. That's right. And just to wrap up this round...
So let's celebrate. I'm feeling great. I'm the guy that found the lost chord.
Lovely record. Leading at the moment this stage of the game by a half mark, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. And let's have some gentle, harmonious choir music. Ian, I'm tempted to ask you where that choir comes from.
Couldn't you resist that temptation?
Well, I'd better, because they come from Bath, and you might have said
Wales. Bath. Oh, that must be the Silver Ring Choir.
Silver Ring Choir of Bath, yes. But now we come to your question. Ian, the arranger of this spiritual, sung by the Silver Ring Choir of Bath, the arranger was born in Stamford and later played the organ at Peterborough Cathedral. And who did arrange that?
Well, Stamford is the clue. And it must have been Sir Malcolm Sargent.
That's right, Sir Malcolm Sargent's arrangement of Little David, Play on Your Harp. Dennis, another spiritual, this time about the Battle of Jericho. Listen and then tell me as exactly as you can where I can read about the Battle of Jericho.
Jericho, 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 Jericho,
Bartle.
Yes, Dennis.
Well, as exact as I can, if you've got a book called Great Battles of History, you'll find it between the Siege of Ilium and the Relief of Lucknow. if you can get there, you can't miss it, as they say.
Ingenuity's got to
get there. Well, of course, it is somewhere in the Bible.
Yes, that's right. Do you know which of the ends of the Bible?
Yes, the Old Testament.
Yes, in the Old Testament. Mark two. John, the composer of this gentle song was born in Dublin. Who wrote it, John?
It's a song called The Bluebird.
Yes.
It's by Charles Villiers Stanford.
Mark to John for that answer. So The Bluebird by Stanford. Frank, here again is the Silver Ring Choir of Bath, and I find myself wondering how they got that name. So, Frank, how did that name originate? The Silver Ring Choir of Bath.
18th century. I thought this was terribly well known. Really, it's hardly worth repeating it. Well, in the 18th century, when the visitors came for the waters at Bath, they were greeted from their carriage by the waits, who then came and played under their window for a fee. And there's one sort of flyboy from Birmingham who was known as the Flywaite. And there was another chap who was rather sort of feather-brained, and he was known as the Featherweight. And the girl in the middle was known as the Middleweight. She was about 12 and a half stone, I suppose, in her shocking feed. And the Featherweight was... Feather was in love with Middle, and they got married in this one of those lovely little sort of round chapels in Bath, and the Flybernight, who was supposed to be the best man, had flogged the ring, and Middleweight, 12 stone, had fingers like sausages. You know, there's no chance of being able to buy a ring just to fit to another ring. But Feather suddenly remembered his clarinet, which he played in the waits, in the tail pocket of his coat. So whisking into his tails, he produced a clarinet, unfastened the clamp, which clamps the reed of a clarinet, and fastened that over his beloved's large, fat finger, and it adjusted the screw until it exactly fitted. And they were very happily married, and they had four children, and he said, "We can have a string quartet." And then they... Yes, they did. You're shaking your head. And they had 11 children, and he said, "We can have a cricket team." And they had 12 children. He said, "We can have a jury." And they had 15 children. They had more children than Mozart had sonatas, violin. And then they had 40 children. And he said, "We will start a choir here in Bath." And that was the origin of the choir. And he named the choir after this little band that his wife wore over her finger, which then got rusty and he couldn't get off, which was the little clamp of his clarinet reed. So he called it the Silver Ring Choir. I don't see why you ask Frank questions where the answers are always so obvious.
Well said, yes. Actually, I spoke to an official of the Silver Ring Choir of Bath, and they just liked the name. Silver tone, perhaps, and a ring of singers. The original group was a little Methodist choir at Bathampton, anyway.
Well, you see, they don't want to be Methodist, do they? Because she wasn't a Puritan.
Now, we're not going back on all that again. Songs of travel make up our final round this week. Travel in the USA first, as I play to Dennis a middle bit and ask him to come in singing the last phrase of the song.
Yeah, don't take this lightly, because the way you said it with concern before about my singing being heard all the way round the world. Go on, then, but
here's
that,
the middle
don't
bit,
expect, yeah.
And then you come right.
Wait, is When a Lady Meets Stern?
Yes.
Yes. And if that ain't real romance, then hush my mouth. When a lady meets a gentleman, a real old southern gentleman, when a lady meets a gentleman. Scott and Whaley used to
yes.
sing it.
When a lady. That's right. Scott and Whaley did sing it, I think. Yes. When a lady meets a gentleman down south. Gets you one out of one. John, what do you wonder as you wonder, and don't you agree with me, it's one of the loveliest of folk songs.
Oh, yes. I wonder as I wander out under the sky, how Jesus the Saviour came down for to die. For poor ornery people like you and like I wonder as I wander out under the sky, if Jesus had wanted for any wee thing a star in the sky, or a bird on the wing, or all of God's angels in heaven for to sing, he surely could have it, 'cause he was the king. I wonder as I wander out under the sky, how Jesus the Saviour he came for to die, for poor ornery people like you and like I wonder as I wander out under the sky.
I did not want that to end, but end it did, and we turned to Frank for a song.
I can't, like Dennis, put my gurgle on the earth.
Songs of travel, I said, if you remember, Frank, at the beginning of this round. So, wandering to France, I wondered if you could tell us about the pink life there.
In France? Oh, the underdone meat, la vie en rose. Quand elle me prend dans ses bras, elle me parlait tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Elle me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Elle est entrée dans mon cœur, une part de bonheur, donc je connais le cause. C'est elle pour moi, moi pour elle dans la vie. Elle me le dit sans jurer pour la vie.
We are having a good sing, aren't we? good sing we are having.
Right. I'm having laughs. Yeah. You aren't.
Ian, Dorset, Somerset, Cornwall and Wales all envy your squab pie, whatever that is. I noticed on the music that it says this verse may be sung in the dialect of the county. Can't wait to hear you. The key, I should think of D. Let's try D.
Yes. And that's a very good key.
Remember I said Dorset, Somerset?
Yes, you did. That sort of puts me... I'm not very good at this sort of accent. I don't know whether I can do it.
Oh, no, do it. Do it in your own mother tongue.
Boom and tour, green meadow and lane, birds on the waving bough, beetling cliffs by the Spanish main, a rich red loam for the plough.
dare into the fount of the bravest blood that braces England's breed. A maiden's fair as the apple bud, and her men are men indeed. When Adam and Eve were dispossessed of the garden hard by heaven, they planted another one down in the west. Was Devon, glorious Devon.
You know, if Frank had sung in English, he wouldn't have bothered with that top note there.
Well. Oh, I don't know.
You
know.
Dialect or no dialect, we do be very grateful to you for listening. And it's a victory this week for Ian Wallace and Dennis North.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Dennis Norden, and Ian Wallace. The questions were compiled by our chairman, Steve Race, and the program was produced for the BBC by Tony Shryan.